Thanks for listening to Other People's Flowers. If you'd like to have your work featured in the program, please send it to editor@otherpeoplesflowers.com. We hope you enjoyed this episode.
We Don't Do Catholics Here by Gemma Prandial. No, we don't do Catholics here. The nurse, starched white uniform, pressed hat angled on her greying hair, stockings with a black line running down the back of the leg, and plain flats, spoke the sentence like it was dogma. They didn't do Catholics there. They didn't do any religion there whatsoever. She'd been addressing an outpatient, a wiry Ethiopian girl with the early onset of scabies going down her left leg. She'd asked what religion the mission was. Were there Catholics there? And the answer, given by Mrs. P, was no. They didn't do those there. Alfred watched the confused girl twist in pain as Mrs. P sunk a gauze swab into her paling flesh and then layered more gauze and zinc tape on top to create a bandage. Once the dressing was done, the girl jumped off the wooden chair and scampered out of the yard and into the street and away. A boy took her place, red dust gathering at the bottom of his once black shoes. "Religion?" said the boy. This time, Mrs. P just ignored him. No religion here. Should he say something? Alfred was, after all, a Catholic. But he wasn't here as one. He was here as a volunteer, just graduated from med school. He wasn't supposed to be questioning the religious values of a non-religious organisation. He was supposed to be offering medical assistance. Only Mrs. P didn't need it. Mrs. P hardly needed anything at all. Mrs. P was at home in Africa and needed no help from anyone. The Humanist Society for Spreading the Good had been founded by Mrs. P in 2005. Dissatisfied with the lack of humanist voluntary organisations, she persuaded her husband, a mining executive, to give her the money to set the society up. And it was a society. None of this mission crap. She wasn't giving people help and food and shelter and then pressing some religious doctrine on them. HSSG was to be the charitable arm of the Fabian Society, if she could get the Fabians to sign up. It was to be the new charity, the new way of helping people in Africa, the new way of doing good, a spur in the side of the critics of atheism to show that even self-centred neoliberal non-believers could do charitable work in Africa. At first, it had just been a couple of whitewashers outhoused in rural Ethiopia, just outside the town of Awassa. Red dirt, pale blue skies, and days of heat and humidity. Nothing but a chain-link fence separated the society from the surrounding village. Then, slowly, with further persuasion of her husband, HSSG had morphed into a fully functioning aid centre. They had bags of rice and wheat to dispense. They had kitchens to make meals of for the starving. They had a ward to let the odd inpatient stay the night. They had a disabled children's section. They had a little house for the volunteers to stay in. They held open clinics every day. They had midwives. In short, they had it all. Although she'd never admit it, Mrs. P based the whole setup on the odious mission of charity she'd visited in Addis Ababa. Of course, unlike in Addis, where they let any volunteers dress wounds and fix cancer, she only allowed the qualified ones to work with her. HSSG was an organisation of high moral principle and character. And she wouldn't have it despoiled by unsanitary volunteers with no medical training. The usual wackos applied to volunteer. The middle-aged, recently divorced or never married losers who always wanted to volunteer in Africa. As if jumping ship in England and helping some black kids would make all the existential guilt go away. No, she wouldn't have them there either. They could stick to Catholicism and Unitarianism and whatever other religion they believed in. At HSSG, only the qualified need apply. Alfred sipped his bowl of soup. The murmuring buzz of voices had died down now that the daily clinic was over, and all the volunteers had gathered for lunch. Mrs. P resided at the head of the table, as she did at all meals, and watched over her staff with those stern green eyes. "Did you see the kid with the fake eyelashes?" said Rose, smiling at Alfred over the top of a steaming spoon of soup. "The little boy?"
"Yeah."
"Wearing the Man U shirt?"
"That's the one."
"Yeah, I did."
"It was funny."
"Yeah, it was."
"Maybe his sisters did it.
I mean, why would a boy be running around with 2-inch fake eyelashes on?"
"I had a doll when I was younger."
"You what?"
"A doll and a pram and all the accoutrements."
"What sort of accoutrements would a doll and a pram have?"
"Well, you'd need a hairbrush to brush her hair. She was a girl."
"She was." "Mr. Levin," Mrs. P's schoolmistress voice came down the long table. "I may be far away from you, but that doesn't mean I can't hear your mindless chatter. Let's please not take the mickey out of our patients. They are people too." And that was that. "And Ms. Trass, we need to have a word after."
"She wanted to see what was on my necklace."
Rose was letting out a steady stream of smoke from her nose. As Alfred watched, it only seemed to come from her left nostril. Was that a skill he hadn't learnt? Maybe they taught you that if you studied medicine at Edinburgh. He made an attempt himself and failed in a cloud of coughing and spluttering.
"Are you okay?"
"Yep, fine. Just went down the wrong way."
"But you're not wearing a necklace."
"Not anymore." She put her hand in the pocket of her dress and withdrew a small black string necklace. Tiny, barely visible, dangling at the end was a small wooden cross with some illegible letters carved into it. "No religion here, Ms. Trass. No God allowed. Nothing but womankind, mankind, and the poor. Take it off, and don't let me see it again."
"Ha. Huh. It's a little extreme, don't you think?"
"Of course it is. All the patients believe in God. They do. I heard she's planning on introducing a new initiative, which will teach the kids about humanism."
"Humanism? Really? Why do these kids want to know about humanism?
Why do any of these people want to know about humanism? She's insane. She's dangerous. She's taking away the one thing that keeps people going."
"But we're both here."
"Yes, we are." Yes, they were. Rose had 2 months left, and so did he. After that, who knew, she would rush back to England, and he'd be back in London, single, alone, and facing a life of fixing people, diagnosing people. Not really fixing anyone at all, just telling them the bad news. He took his phone out and photographed her in her pale blue dress. "What are you doing?" she smiled.
"For the memories."
"Send it to me."
"Sure."
They dropped their cigarettes and went back inside. "I'm the punctual gangster, the tight-lipped swearer, the honourable mofo, the safety-first daredevil, the easy-going pimp, the rustled-up pompadour-haired rocket boy." "I'm not sure about the last one."
"What? Why?"
"Well, you go through all these oxymorons, it seems, and then just this random one on the end. Not sure it makes any sense." David Fury was the resident poet. There's always one. Every place you go in Africa that takes volunteers, one of them will always be a dropout itinerant poet, using his or her lyrics to bring justice to the world.
"Well, man, you're right."
He seemed genuinely disappointed. "What about silent rapper?"
Yeah, I like that, bro."
Fury scribbled something down in his moleskin and set it down on the plastic table. Okay, listen up everyone, please. Mrs. P came marching in her efficient way. She took her hat off and clutched it in front of her. "Is everyone here? Where's Rose? Ah, there you are. Please sit, Ms. Trass. Now, I know you might have heard the rumours about the incursions in the north. Now, I must be the bearer of bad news, I'm afraid. It looks like they're getting worse. There was an attack in Wassa just last night. I don't want anyone to panic, but we may have to leave here on short notice." She struggled to get anything more out. All the volunteers looked at her blankly. Their news came in dribs and drabs from the one afternoon they might spend at the internet cafe. Incursions in the north. Alfred had read an Al Jazeera article about them, but this was a big country. Islamists wouldn't come marching down here. Besides, the article had suggested it was all under control. The FCO had warned against travel to the north. But nothing about visiting the country. They were safe.
There's an extremist spirit coming, continued Mrs. P. I don't want any of you to panic, but just be prepared, okay? You could see her dreams crashing down as she spoke. Once again, religion was going to ruin her plans for humanism, for something better for suffering people. Mrs. P. strolled out, clutching her hat in front of her like a votive offering. The volunteers looked at each other, at the walls, at the table, at the pale blue sky outside. Well, I'm done then, bro, said David Fury. No point kicking around here waiting to become some jihadi's plaything. No way I'm going to be wearing an orange suit and having my fucking head cut off. No way, bro. I'm young. I've got stuff to give to the world. He went out, shaking his head and muttering to himself. Two women, sisters, looked at each other and walked out as well. That left a Madame Brennan from Toulouse, who never spoke to anyone, and Alfred and Rose. It wasn't clear if the Madame had understood. She remained seated, staring out of the window. Pussy, said Rose. Who? Fury. All Yanks are the same. First sign of a little bit of trouble, and they call the embassy to come rescue them. Pathetic. It is a little worrying. Hardly. You're clearly not a vet. Vets know that a little trouble in the north is hardly a problem. This country's half the size of Europe. The north's a long way away. You're not a vet either. A veteran, you tool. Oh, true. In no time at all, they saw David Fury marching out across the small courtyard that separated the volunteers' housing from the rest of the compound. Backpack half the size of him, smaller backpack on his chest like he was carrying a baby. Timberland laced the whole way up. Hat and sunglasses on, combat trousers that turned into shorts half undone at the knee to let the air in, ready to rock. Rose hung her head out the window. Where are you going? I told you, I'm getting the fuck out of here. The reports of combat in the north were not as harmless as everyone had hoped. Within 3 days, fighters were attacking the city of Harar, supposedly the country's second city. The southwestern tip of the country had also had some minor incursions, but it wasn't clear if they were related to the ones in the north. I'll never leave, said Mrs. P in her laconic voice. Never, never, never. Not so laconic. Alfred, Rose and Madame Brennan were the last remaining volunteers. The patients kept coming as if everything was normal. My husband's threatening to leave soon, but I won't do it. I just won't. Rain was coming on the clouds, thick and grey with the African heat. The red earth had turned mauve. Solitary acacias and unidentifiable shrubs whistled in the gentle wind. Who do you think she prays to? Said Rose when she'd left. There were 10 patients remaining, and they changed their dressings methodically. Maybe it's like an AA thing. You just pray to a higher power or whatever. But according to her, there is no higher power. Well, she should probably hope for one now, he paused. And our arrangements? What about our arrangements? Should we prepare to flee? She remained silent, focusing on pressing gauze into a man's gangrenous leg. She didn't notice the way he winced and shivered with pain as she wrapped zinc tape around him. Well, should we? He asked again. Light droplets of rain began to fall. I suppose so. You're wearing your cross again? Yes. Mrs. P can't stop me now. They all piled into the white Toyota Land Cruiser, rolled the windows up while Mrs. P gathered the last of the supplies she thought they'd need. Sanitary towels, apparently personal hygiene was essential, but a third spare tire or jerry can of water was not. There was no use arguing, though. It was Mrs. P's car, after all. Right. I'll drive first. Then we'll take it in turns. I assume everyone has a driving license? They were heading to the capital. Within 5 days, the country had turned into a shadowy war zone. People were dying. But where? People were being displaced. People were going missing. 4 white Red Cross workers had been abducted. A beheading. It was all too much. They closed down the clinic, locked it up, hid the supplies, and were heading north to the capital. From there, they would seek embassy assistance. Repatriation was being offered to all Western aid workers. Time to go. They would be heading cross-country, the roads were too dangerous.
There was a route you could take, less travelled, across the barren southern plains until you hit the main road into the capital. If they were lucky, they'd get through without incident. Red, clay-brown earth, shrubs, bush, endless bush, the calm purr of the Toyota, dust kicking up and staining the sides, they travelled for 11 hours before taking a break. Each of them drove for 2 hours each. Rose drove the last stretch with Alfred sitting next to her. I think they're asleep, said Rose. She took her cross out and began fiddling with it, clasping it in her teeth and running it up and down the thin leather string. I've said a Hail Mary every hour since we left. She released the necklace, letting the wooden cross dangle down over the steering wheel. Have you prayed? Do you pray? Do you even believe in God? I do. I don't pray. I have now, but I do believe in God, just not the God they tell you about. What God do you believe in? They were driving over a field full of small dips and troughs. The car went up and down like a roller coaster. Rocks and pebbles pinged and ponged off the wheels as Rose accelerated away. I believe God's everywhere, and in everything and everyone. I think when you do certain things, good things, you're doing the things God wants you to do, or you're channeling the God that's all around, and when you do bad things, you're turning away from the God that's all around. What happens when we die? I don't know, isn't that the point? All that's certain is that the atoms we're made up of don't disappear when we die, so maybe we go into some kind of synthesis with the matter around us. He shook his head. The words sounded empty. But no, I don't know. I like that theory. She reached over to the middle of the car and took a bottle of water from the cup holder next to the handbrake. Drops of water spilled down her chin as she tried to drink and drive. Was now the moment to say something? Were the other two asleep in the back of the car? Tell Rose that whatever happened, if they died by the side of the road, if they broke down and starved to death, if they made it back to England and never saw each other again, that he thought he loved her, that there was something there. Was it right now or was it never? He turned to stare out of the window. We'll have to take turns keeping watch. I don't like the idea of stopping, but if Madame Bremen can't drive, I think it's too dangerous to have the rest of us driving tired. Take a break, as the old sign says. Mrs. P was standing in front of a bright red sky, the sun dipping behind some low-slung hills, brown dry grass turning ashen in the fading light. But she can drive, said Rose. She just doesn't have a driving license. Exactly. What if we get stopped by the police? Some cattle herders were nearby, moving their cattle off towards the sunset, presumably to shelter and safety. They watched the panicked white people with a steely indifference, as if to say, yes, you can go home, but what about us? What will happen to us? Mrs. P turned away from the car. I'll take first watch. Okay. Leave a door open so I can get in and drive off if needs be. It hardly seemed likely that Mrs. P would save them all in the event of a truck full of insurgents coming cruising over the dusty terrain and spraying them with machine gun fire. But hey, you gotta give them something to keep them calm, and Mrs. P needed more than anything to feel like she had everything under control. He sidled into the back of the Toyota next to Rose. Madame Bremen was in the front and was staring at the beautiful scenery with narrow eyes. He put his head back and tried to sleep. An hour, maybe two, he woke with Rose's head on his shoulder. She'd moved towards the car and was curled into a fetal position, one arm behind her back, and her head lulling on his shoulder. He put an arm around her. We need to go. Mrs. P came rushing into the car and slammed the door. Everyone was awake. What is it? Said Alfred. Rose pulled herself off his shoulder and moved back across the car. That car over there, said Mrs. P, pointing at a pickup truck in the distance. They've been there for 10 minutes and haven't moved. We need to go. You want me to drive, said Rose. No, I can drive. I can do it. Please. She turned the car on, and they were off, speeding across the semi-flat emptiness, lights bobbing up and down as they went. You need to slow down, said Alfred. You can't see far enough in the darkness. As the lights dipped and bucked, insects were illuminated briefly as they headed to their death on the front of the speeding car. The lights only went a maximum of 20 meters ahead of them. If an obstacle emerged now, they'd all be walking the rest of the way. Absolutely not. What did I tell you? Moving slowly, keeping its distance, the truck was behind them now, lights roving up and down like theirs. Alfred tried to figure out figures in the back, but couldn't. Oh God, said Rose, taking Alfred's hand. Oh God, don't bring God into it, said Mrs. P. This is just us now. Us and them. Humanity and humanity. God is nowhere to be seen now. Rose looked at Alfred, and he shook his head. No point in arguing with her now. But it was too late. Rose was already committed. You know you should just let us have our beliefs. Even if you don't believe. Most people in Africa believe. What would they have if they didn't have faith in God? God's not getting us out of this mess. Hail Mary, full of grace. What are you doing? Said Mrs. B. The Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed... Stop! Stop it! I won't stand for it. Stop! Madame Bremen began. Notre Père. Qui est au ciel? Absolutely not. I'll stop the car. I'm telling you. I'll stop the car. And then what? God will help us. Et ne nous soumets pas. Hail Mary, full of... Altogether now, thought Alfred, and glanced back at the truck, which had made up ground on them. Right, enough, enough. The car jolted, it veered left and right, moving like an out-of-control boat on water, slipping and sliding across the grass and over the hillocks like they were waves. Mrs. P braked. The Toyota jarred, its axles squeaking as it came to stop. What? Why did you stop? Said Alfred. They're right there, just ignore the praying, come on. Mrs. P put her head in between her hands on the steering wheel. We've got a flat tyre. She paused. Rose and Madame Bremen stopped their recitations. See where all your praying's got us? She began to cry, muffled by the steering wheel and her hands. The lights of the truck dipped one final time before it pulled to a stop behind them. Its full beams went on, and the untimely melody of four doors being opened and closed broke the black silence. A torch was shined into the car. Mrs. P didn't look up. Madame Bremen was looking down. Rose still clutched Alfred's hand. A torch was shone into the car. Mrs. P didn't look up. Madame Bremen was looking down. Tap, 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 went the end of the torch against the window of the driver's seat. Mrs. P remained motionless. Tap, tap, tap. Tap, tap, tap. Gathering herself, wiping her eyes, Mrs. P looked up. She pressed the button to open the passenger window. Everything all right, said a voice behind the torch. Please don't hurt us, said Mrs. P. Why would we hurt you? A light chuckle followed. We're just trying to get to the capsule, please. Need some help changing the tyre? Shortly they were all outside the car, helped by the four men who worked for the Red Crescent to change their flat tyre. The jack went under the car went up, the wheel came off, and the spare was on. They'd been at their nearby aid station when some passing shepherds had told them that four white people were driving around open country in a Toyota Land Cruiser. This, one of the men says, was not the place to be driving at night. Islamists had been seen in the area, and really what they should do is head east and then north, and they'd be in the capital within 4 hours. Did they want an escort? Certainly. The Red Crescent workers followed them as far as the main road into the capital, gave them a flash of their lights, and headed in the opposite direction. Dawn was breaking as they drove the last 40 kilometres into the capital. The lights scattered across the empty two-lane road, illuminating the bush and the odd cat's eye in the middle of the road. Mrs. P drove the whole way. They all sat in silence. Rose had long since released Alfred's hand. He tried to make eye contact with her, but she was looking out the window. Her body turned away from his. Within 2 days, he was on a plane. They were all on a plane. Madame Bremen to Paris, Mrs. P, Alfred and Rose to London. HSSG had had to shut down as the country descended into murder and chaos. Rose returned to her boyfriend and married him the following spring, and Alfred soon forgot about her. Mrs. P, well, who knows?
Other People's Flowers was produced by Hugo Gibson, Chris Kamonvutitam, and Hamish Adam Cairns. If you'd like to have your work featured on the show, please send it to editor@otherpeoplesflowers.com. Thank you for listening.